Hello, this is Joe Boyd, and welcome to another edition of The Rule of 13. That's Duda Pequana's Church Mouse bringing us in. We're going to start by looking at roots music, in quotes. The centrality, in a way, of the whole movement towards back to the roots and examining our musical roots has been the involvement of the middle-class consumers in playing that music. When I got to Boston, going to Harvard in the early 60s, I found a very different climate from what existed in New York, what I was aware of as the folk scene, where people were singing political songs and strumming guitars kind of in a kind of hearty way. It was full of very earnest people learning exactly how to play traditional musical instrumental styles and singing in traditional styles. And there was a lot of them, of course, were fascinated by bluegrass. And there's a whole phenomenon of urban bluegrass players. And one of the geniuses of the great Bill Monroe, the inventor of bluegrass music, was that he recognized this very early on. And when he started having trouble getting the players to the standard that he wanted down south, he started recruiting city billies, middle-class people who were just fans and had learned his music slavishly and were very, very good at it. And the first person he hired was Bill Keith, a banjo player, who was an MIT mathematics student who'd applied his mathematical skills to figuring out the banjo and ended up ghostwriting Earl Scruggs' banjo book and inventing the Scruggs peg. And there was also a wonderful singer named Peter Rowan, who played guitar, sang very much like Bill Monroe. So Bill liked him a lot. And Richard Green, who was a fiddle player, who, you know, could play jazz, could play all kinds of things, but also very, very good traditional fiddle player. And a fellow named David Grisman, who never played with Monroe because he was a mandolin player, but he studied with Monroe and learned very much that school. And I got them all together in 1973, and we made a record called Mule Skinner with the great Clarence White, who was actually from the South and didn't really qualify as a city billy on guitar. And we're going to start with a track of theirs and then move on to an old friend of mine who became one of the leading white blues men, and then go to a French cellist who moved to Syria to become a great canoon virtuosi.
Some folks like the summertime when they can walk about. Strolling through the meadow green is pleasant, there's no doubt. But give me the wintertime when the snow is on the ground. For I found that when the snow lay on the ground, I traced a little footprint through the snow. I found a little footprint in the snow. Lord, bless that happy day. In to see her, there was a big round moon. The mama said she just stepped out, but she'd be returning soon. I found her little footprints and I traced them through the snow. Well, I found her when the snow lay on the ground. But I found her little footprints in the snow. I traced her little footprints through the snow. Lord, bless that happy day. On the ground. ¶¶
She's up in heaven, she's with the angel band. I know I'm gonna see her in that happy land. Every time the snow falls, it brings back memories. For I found her when the snow lay on the ground. But I traced her little footprints through the snow. I found her little footprints in the snow. Lord, I blessed that happy day. But I found a little footprints in the snow, Lord. I blessed that happy day that never lost her way. For I found her when the snow lay on the ground.
Thank you.
That was the Al-Kindi Ensemble and Muwashah from an album called Les Croisades, The Crusades. The Al-Kindi Ensemble was put together by a Frenchman called Julian Weiss, who moved many years ago to Aleppo in Syria and studied the Qanun. And he put together some of the greatest musicians in Syria, created the Al-Kindi Ensemble, which tours around Europe and the world quite a lot, and kind of the Bill Monroe in reverse, the middle class aspirant, putting together the great virtuosi from the original sources. And the record, the Crusades record, is fascinating. It's a celebration of the culture that was kind of disrupted and largely destroyed by those hairy, unwashed barbarians from the north called Crusaders who came around and trashed an ancient civilization. Anyway, I'm glad the West learned their lesson from that and obviously will never do such a thing again. Before that, it was Jeff Muldaur and Wild Ox Moan from the singing of Vera Hall, a record that was very much on people's turntables back in the early 60s in Cambridge, Massachusetts, where Jeff and I shared an apartment for a while. And I was actually quite shocked that Jeff became a white blues singer, because when we were growing up as teenagers, we agreed that there was nothing more ridiculous than a white blues singer. But I was surprised when he turned out that he knew how to play the guitar and was singing on stage at a folk club in Boston. But he actually turned out to be very good. And then before that, we had Footprints in the Snow by Mule Skinner. Last week, we looked at Baião a little bit, the music from the northeast of Brazil that came down and swept through Brazil in the late 40s and early 50s. By the late 50s in Brazil, there was a whole scene developing in Rio, which became what we know as Bossa Nova. And it's just, you know, Bossa Nova is part of our musical landscape now. We take it pretty much for granted. It even got to become old-fashioned and considered square by the, not really, but sort of, by the Tropicália revolutionaries, Veloso and Gil and all the rest in the late 60s. But there's a very interesting book about Bossa Nova by a guy called Rui Castro. And he talks about João Gilberto, the man who kind of really invented that strum, that guitar strum, which defines Bossa Nova and became the first big star of Bossa Nova. And there's a little passage in here I'd like to read because it's just such a great description of how this all came to be. He was defeated. He was a failure. Gilberto went out to the country and he was staying with some relatives in the country. A maelstrom of thoughts buzzed around in João Gilberto's head during his exile in the mountains. He spent the first weeks in silence, rehashing old memories. But something ignited a spark in him, because suddenly he started to playing his guitar day and night, shut up in his room as if seized by some kind of obsession. At first, nothing he played made much sense. He would repeat the same chord a million times, each one almost perfectly identical to the next, except when he added his voice. He discovered that the acoustics in the bathroom were ideal for listening to both himself and the guitar. All those floor and wall tiles, infused for years with steam and humidity, created a kind of echo chamber, the chords reverberating, and he could measure their intensity. If he sang more softly without vibrato, he could speed up or slow down at will, creating his own tempo. To do this, he needed to change the way he projected, using his nose more than his mouth. His mind was like a radio whose dial was spinning, apparently at random, tuning into everything he heard and loved. The colorful harmonies of the vocal ensembles, how was it possible to use one's voice to alter or complete the guitar's harmony? Lucio Alves' phrasing, only Lucio would phrase backward, delaying himself. It was possible to speed up and slow down in relation to the rhythm, as long as the beat remained constant. Johnny Alf's syncopated beat on the piano, and particularly Donato's on the accordion, how would that sound on the guitar? The new João Gilberto was being reborn from these experiences. And we're going to hear a track, a beautiful samba by Paulinho da Viola first, to hear what the basic samba rhythm that they were kind of rebelling against, that Gilberto was rebelling against, and then a beautiful track by Gilberto, and then what happened when the Americans get a hold of it, which usually wasn't that good, but this is a track I love. This is Paulinho da Viola.
Este seu olhar, quando encontra o meu, fala de umas coisas que eu não posso acreditar. Doce é sonhar, é pensar que você gosta de mim como eu de você. Mas a ilusão, quando se desfaz, dói no coração de quem sonhou, sonhou demais. Ah, se eu pudesse entender o que dizem os seus olhos. Thank you. dói no coração de quem sonhou, sonhou demais. Ah, se eu pudesse entender o que dizem os seus olhos.
That's Dizzy Gillespie and No More Blues, which is the English translation of Chega de Saudade by Tom Jobim, a bossa nova classic. And with help of the great Leo Wright on sax and Lalo Schifrin on piano, he does a pretty, I mean, I love that version. It's not very, it's not particularly bossa nova, but I played it so much on vinyl that I kind of wore it out. And so I played a CD version today. And I have to say that might be my Exhibit A in the case against Digits. You can hear all the percussion so clearly, but it almost, in a way, is like it's unmixed. It was so beautifully mixed, such a warm blend on the vinyl. And now with all that top end, just picking out all the details of everything, it kind of separates it from the sound it once was. Before that, we had the wonderful warm vinyl sound of João Gilberto singing Este Seu Olhar, That Look of Yours, by Tom Jobim. And you can hear Jobim noodling on the piano, just coming in occasionally and picking out melodies on the piano. Beautiful recording. And you can also hear just that way of playing the guitar that Gilberto invented in that bathroom way up country in Brazil. And before that, we had Paulinho da Viola and his tribute to the great Brazilian composer Radames Natali, called Sarau para Radames. Excuse the paper noise. So now we're coming into my comfort zone, my home territory, the famous Shoot Out the Lights tour of 1982 with Richard and Linda Thompson. You've all heard these stories before, I think. They made this great record. We planned a tour of America. And between the end of the record and the beginning of the tour, Richard and Linda split up. And Richard's manager called me and said, absolutely impossible. Linda can't possibly go on the tour. And I said, but we booked them everywhere. It's Richard and Linda. The record is Richard and Linda. And I called up Linda and she said, well, I've lost my marriage. Why should I lose an American tour as well? So she went on the tour and has never sung better, I think. She was just something about that, the emotional intensity of that time, brought out every great quality in her singing. And I've also talked a bit in interviews and in this new edition that Rhino's put out of this record about the fact that I was so excited by the way Linda was singing that I planned a live recording. But unfortunately, I planned it for the wrong moment. It was the end of the tour when she kind of burned herself out. She was a bit exhausted. They found some pretty good tracks, though, from the multi-track recording we did. But this is a cassette off the soundboard, which is of, I don't know which city it is from the tour. But this is Richard and Linda Thompson, and I'll Keep It With Mine.
Oh, but how long? loving you, not for what you are, but for what you're not.
Night like this, I'm so glad you came around. Hold on to me so tight and heat up some coffee ground. We got so much to talk about and so much to reminisce. It sure be right on a night like this. Well, on a night like get
the snow is so very deep. Build a fire, throw on a log, and listen to the hills. And let it burn, burn, burn on a night like this. Get your body next to mine and keep me a company. There's a plenty of room for.
We ended up with three Dylan covers, starting with Richard and Linda Thompson, and I'll Keep It With Mine, a song I don't think he ever recorded himself. He wrote it for Nico to sing with the Velvet Underground. That included Dave Mattox on drums, Pete Zorn on bass, and Simon Nicol on rhythm guitar. And then we went to Buckwheat Zydeco's very good version of On a Night Like This. And then, of course, Jimi Hendrix, All Along the Watchtower. I don't know how many of you have seen the film that I produced called Jimi Hendrix. It was a documentary made in 1973 for Warner Brothers. And it's got some great footage, all the classic footage of Hendrix. And but we were so fortunate because we found some wonderful people to interview, including Jimmy's girlfriend from the early days when he was living in Harlem and working with the Isley Brothers and Little Richard, living in a cold water walk-up somewhere in near 125th Street. And she tells this story about she was expecting him to come home with groceries. He had some money, the only money they had. And he comes in the door, and she looks at him like, where's the groceries? And he's got this bag, and it's kind of LP-shaped. And she says, you bought a record with our grocery money? What'd you buy? At least it better be something good, you know. And he won't show it to her. He's like holding it behind his back. And she reaches around, grabs his arm, grabs the bag, rips it open, and says, Bob Dylan? Who the fuck is Bob Dylan? You spent our grocery money on Bob Dylan? Anyway, that was Jimmy's early obsession with Bob Dylan. And that's it for Lucky 13. See you next time.